The Voices.Earth podcast series is brought to you by the .Earth domain. In each episode, we shine a light on organizations and individuals who are part of the growing .Earth tribe, as well as those outside of our tribe who are all making our planet a better place. In this Voices.Earth podcast interview, we are speaking with Briar Jacques, who is the co-founder of the Free Spirit Project.Earth, which is an organization that offers a wide range of mindfulness courses, retreats, programs for schools, and much more. And Briar, how are you doing today?
Good, thanks, Matt.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us. It's great to have you today. And let's start at the top, if you don't mind. Tell us about the Free Spirit Project, the organization's history, mission, and all that good stuff.
Cool, yeah. So I'm a psychologist from Australia, and I spend a lot of time working in clinics and hospitals. And for, you know, about 20 years, I've been a meditation teacher and yoga teacher as well. And I guess the company started because I wanted to shift out of a clinical setting. And I wanted to take therapy and the different ways we can help people using the mindfulness-based therapies out of a kind of sick well paradigm. And I wanted to take it into a more creative space where, you know, there's a lot of stigma around mental health services, and especially in the part of the world that I'm in, which is the Middle East. And I wanted to help shift people's perceptions about what it means to be flourishing mentally and how that's not about sick or well. It's not binary. It's about working with certain processes over time. So we shifted out of that sort of clinical focus space, and that's why we called it Free Spirit Project, that we're a kind of never finished. We're under construction our whole lives. We're a project, and that setting your sights on freedom of your spirit rather than this idea that there's some kind of normative psychological wellness, because I think that that creates issues for people. I'd seen that in my career, so I wanted to move out of that space. Does that explain it a little bit?
Yeah, it sure does. And I really love the concept of mindfulness and also ACT, which is acceptance and commitment training. And I've certainly seen mindfulness and meditation having kind of a renaissance over the past couple of years. But it seems like in this day and age, especially with what's going on with the world, it seems like it's a very important thing. So maybe tell us a little bit more about just mindfulness and ACT, and also how it applies just to the way we are operating now with COVID and even without COVID.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so acceptance commitment therapy or acceptance commitment training, you know, usually it's said as one word, as ACT, because otherwise it sounds a little bit too much like ECT or electric shock therapy, you know, previously known as. So we say ACT, and that kind of captures what we're doing with it as well. So what ACT is it's a process-based or process-based oriented therapy. So it works on six different human processes of being. So it's looking to track growth in those processes rather than kind of looking at symptoms and looking at eradication of symptoms. We don't really do that. As a process, you know, based therapy, you do get symptom reduction, but it's not your target. So with ACT, we say the target is living a life of more purpose and meaning as defined by one's values. So we're looking at, you know, the human experience is not pain-free, nor is it ever going to be. And so it's, can I work with pain if it arises? And can I still keep moving towards what's most important to me? And so to do that, you develop and strengthen your mindfulness, your ability to be present and to notice what your mind is doing and accept what your feelings are currently doing and still make the actions or engage in the behaviors across time that create a life of purpose and meaning and that get you living on purpose. So it's different from this idea that, you know, if I have anxiety, it's a big problem and I've got to get rid of that. Or if I have these symptoms, I've got to target them and kind of get externally focused with that, with use of medication or with that. It's not that that doesn't have its place. And I'm certainly all for people feeling more functional in their lives, but it's just that we don't target that as the end goal. kind of just happens along the way. So we do a bunch of stuff. It's a very experiential type of therapy. It's about setting up experiences with your client or clients if you're doing it in a group setting, and letting people build, I suppose, engagement so that their own experiences start to inform their choices going forward, rather than a set of rules about how I need to be okay, if that makes sense. So they're engaging in these kind of experiments or experiences and processes so that they're able to start to have realizations within themselves around what they care about and what's possible for them. So we target what's called psychological flexibility. And I could get seriously nerdy right now, but I'm going to stop.
That's great. And one thing you said really caught my attention there was about life being pain-free. And I understand in Buddhism, one of the core truths is that life, suffering is going to happen in life, no matter what, and for everybody, for all people. And it really gives you kind of the framework, at least in Buddhism, to deal with that and manage that and live in the present moment and the like. And just out of curiosity, any like Buddhist principles weave their way into your efforts there?
Yeah, well, I mean, we look at the wisdom traditions across all the religious and philosophical systems in human history, and it's all in there about how to live. You know, we've known, the humans have known how to flourish. And I suppose what you're seeing with the mindfulness-based therapies like ACT is a kind of blending of science and wisdom traditions, you know, or wisdom, human wisdom tradition knowledge. So yeah, I mean, embedded within Buddhism, of course, is this idea that pain is inevitable to the human experience. I mean, we show up here and we don't know what's going on. I mean, look at what's going on at the moment. No certainty. You know, there never is, though. That's not new. It's just that our ability to predict at the moment's been even more radically reduced than normal. You know, so we don't know what's going on. We have no certainty. 5 minutes from now, we don't know what's happening. And that's inherently painful. And then we can't control things. We can't control anything, really. We can respond and we can build our ability to be present, pay attention, and therefore have more response ability. But we can't control. And that's inherently painful when we have a mind that really wants control at all times, you know, an ego / mind. And so pain is inevitable, but suffering optional. Suffering is the, you know, pain is the thing that's happening, the isness of the situation. And suffering is the story you carry about what's happening. And so in the mindfulness-based therapies, that's what we go after. We look at that, not to invalidate the person's pain or experience, but to notice that they actually have room to move. They can withdraw attention from a pain story and just be with a direct experience. And then they get in touch with that everything is transitory and everything is temporary. So, you know, if you look at Buddhism, you know, Islam, Christianity, all of the big sort of religious philosophical systems, they all talk about this stuff, you know, dive into them. They all reference this stuff and have been for a long time.
Yeah, for a very long time, especially Buddhism. You know, that's really neat. Tell us about your offerings. I know you have a wide range of courses, retreats, even programs for schools. Would love to hear more about your programs.
Sure. So we work one-on-one with loads of people doing mindfulness and ACT, but then we do groups. So we run an introduction to mindfulness group. We do a level 2 mindfulness group, self-compassion, introduction to self-compassion, things like that. And then I like doing day experiences. I call them therapy off the chair, where we go and they're usually involving some kind of physical activity. We're always trying to get beyond this language thing that we carry around. You know, it's our greatest blessing and our biggest curse when you think about what minds can do when they kind of turn on us with this sort of stories. And so I really love to take people into, say, you know, a dance class or a yoga setting or a hike or surfing or just different type of experiences where they get to just be out of their languaging of a situation. And they're so, I suppose, captured by what's going on. You know, it's kind of a full experience. Like when, for instance, you're in a dance class, you've got to be in your body. And so it gets you out of that, and you get to experience both yourself and your life in a different way. So we do that kind of stuff, and we try and get creative about planning those. The current situation has put a little bit of a pause button on those type of things, of course, but we plan to get back into it. And then, yeah, our school's program's not run by me. It's run by Dom Watts, and he is an ex-teacher in mindfulness training. So our idea with the schools is that you don't teach mindfulness to kids didactically. Kids are already mindful, but the adults in the school community, so that would be parents and teachers, you help them to focus in on their own practice so that they can model, nurture, and protect the kids' mindfulness and by practicing their own. And so mindfulness is not a what, it's a how. So math mindfully, English mindfully, everything mindfully, because teachers come up with the most cool, creative, spontaneous mindfulness interventions that it's not technique-y. So it's not like you go and teach them a bunch of mindfulness techniques. They just get more mindful themselves and it just comes out in the classroom. And we've seen some really cool stuff happening in the schools we've worked with here in Dubai. So yeah, we actually are halfway through an expansion. And coronavirus came along and kind of sort of stuck us halfway through this expansion where we're moving from the Free Spirit Project to the Free Spirit Collective. So I've got about another 5 people joining, offering different things. And yeah, maybe can update you on that later once it all comes into actuality. But yeah, so we've got some more stuff coming on
online. That'd be great. Yeah, we could certainly, we are open to doing a follow-on podcast when you go through this expansion. And if you have other people on your team that would like to join the conversation, we certainly welcome that. That would be awesome. So yeah, great. And also, I love your website. Lots of great information on it. Great design. It's freespiritproject.earth. You all are users of the .earth domain. What made you choose .earth?
Love it. Well, it's just beautiful, you know. We really try and get away from this idea of, you know, we spend so much time compartmentalizing and separating and focusing on difference. And I love .earth because it's just the truth, you know. We're all citizens of Earth. And, I mean, what we're going through at the moment, as tough as it is, and, you know, I'm a therapist, so every day, all day, I'm dealing with the people who are experiencing the toughness of it. But also the connectivity of it, you know, this idea that we're not connected is an illusion, and it's really showing us that. So yeah, I'm all for this and cool other companies that have .earth. So it was a no-brainer really when choosing.
That's great. Yeah, you certainly sound like you embody the vision behind .earth, because we certainly have what we call a .earth tribe. Lots of interesting organizations and people like yourself that use it. But also, too, our vision behind it is really to kind of promote the betterment of life. And a lot of organizations and people like yourselves are clearly doing that and using .earth for that, which is just, it's awesome.
Great. Yeah.
Great. Cool. Well, what does the future hold? I know you're going to go through some expansion here, bring on some more people, hopefully once the COVID winds down, hopefully soon, knock on wood. But beyond that, what's your future vision for your efforts?
Yeah, well, we are planning to move to the Free Spirit Collective. And that means that we're bringing on board different services. We're actually going to be focusing to work with more clinical populations as well. As non-clinical. What I mean by that is people who are really in that suffering space and might have been approaching that or working with that in a more medical way. And we were starting to work with those people as well. But our plan is to not base ourselves in amongst the medical world, but rather the creative world. So we're actually relocating into a part of Dubai, which is the hub for the creatives here. So that's new and different. And so we've got quite a lot sort of planned there to work with more clinical presentation, to do a lot more community service stuff. So we have, you know, at the moment we run meditation groups online, you know, during the COVID crisis, but those all translate into online, but also drop in. So the idea is to have free community service offerings all the way up to one-on-one offerings, and a huge range of kind of costs from free to, you know, covered by insurance, more expensive things. We do quite a lot of corporate work as well, just so we're really diversified and we can offer something to everybody in the community. And so that's really the vision, is to how can we scale mental health services? I think that, you know, I don't mean to be negative in any way, but post-COVID, we are going to see a lot of exacerbation of mental health issues. There's a lot of talk about that in the psychological kind of world at the moment. And meeting that, you know, in a way that is accessible to a bunch of folks who can't afford the one-on-one services. So we've been looking at developing groups. I've been running a group online since, you know, 2 months now, every 48 hours. That's kind of a holding space for people. I call it a certainty anchor group, when there's so much uncertainty happening, and we get together and we discuss mindfulness and sometimes do a little bit of teaching around ACT, and then we meditate together. And that's been really cool. So we'll keep things like that going. We'll look at different interventions around social anxiety, PTSD, OCD in group format coming up, both in person and online. We'll keep our online stuff going and expand on that. But yeah, once I get other team members post COVID, we'll be able to, you know, do quite a lot more. We've been doing stuff for companies. We're reaching people who might find it difficult to get to a one-on-one therapy session. So we sort of do this mental health work with them online already, and we'll be expanding that. So yeah, but the fun stuff too, where we get together with people. I can't wait to get together with people in person. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's great. I think for all of us, right, across the board. Yeah, once we can get those connections going again, face to face with people, will be just a healing thing, I think, for all of us. So that's awesome. Well, it sounds like a wonderful project and a really awesome future ahead of you all. And really appreciate your time today, Briar. And before we sign off, is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed?
No, I think we've covered, you know, I'd just like to encourage people who, anyone listening to this, you know, like, meditation is such a simple thing to do, and it has, as you pointed out, you know, a huge evidence base. Like, just looking at the Buddhist tradition, a 2,500 year evidence base. So this is a really powerful human technology. It can help you. You know, it's, meditation was designed to help you get away when you can't get away. And so that inner world that we're all being asked to look at the moment. I mean, I'm watching people embrace meditation because they feel they have to at the moment, but it's going to change their life for the better forever. So that's amazing. So I just encourage anyone listening to this. There is so much available online to teach you to meditate, and there are groups happening everywhere you can join in with. It doesn't have to be us. You know, there's heaps of people offering stuff. And yeah, it's definitely the way to go, the, you know, mindfulness base, and not necessarily mindfulness as it's often misunderstood, which is to calm down, to be zen, to chill out. That's not what it is. You know, mindfulness is a way of being with what is and still participating in your life according to your values and feeling less stuck, more free. So that's accessible to us all. We already had it. Up until we got language, we were completely mindful, and it's still in there. There's no such thing as unlearning in a human being. No delete button in the nervous system.
that's fascinating. I didn't really think about it from the perspective of pre-languages, but yeah, I love all your comments there and insights when it comes to meditation, because I also think too, for people getting into it, they might be a little intimidated or scared, but really the process is very simple, but it does take time to get there. So it's hard, but yet it's simple at the same time. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, teaching people to meditate takes about 2 minutes. And, you know, motivating people to practice, because that means you've got to get past the mind and the ego, you know, that takes my, like, that's what I dedicate my whole career to. So, you know, when you think about a human being as kind of a system, and, you know, or like a country, and in this country, you've got mind and you've got body and you've got emotional self, you know, and you've got soul or spirit or whatever you want to use words for that. And, you know, the mind, the part of us that we've been very conditioned to think is us, is something that we acquired, and it's something we acquired through language, culture, and experience, but it's not who we are. And that part of us doesn't really ever want to meditate, because when you meditate, you're usurping the dominance of that part of you, creating, I like to think of it as like a democracy within, because the body, no problem, very much wants to meditate. The spirit, of course, you know, wants to meditate, and the emotional system has no problem with it either. But we've been so trained to listen just to our clever intellect, and to that's the problem-solving tool that we have. It's not the tool for every job, but we tend to apply it to the world within, and that gets us in a load of trouble, really. It gets us entangled with mind. And so when people become a meditator, it's like they develop this inner democracy, and they learn to listen to the other parts of themselves. And the dominance of that intellect, that ego, is loosened up, it's usurped. And so that's not the part of you which you can rely on to build a practice, if you know what I mean. So it's tricky. I mean, I can literally go on about this all day.
it's funny. I could too, because I'm a big fan. Even if I do it some mornings only for 10 minutes, but it puts me right in the right mindset. And I think the key too is that it just is shutting down all the noise in your brain. And that part I think is kind of difficult, but the longer you do it, the more you train, the better you can be at getting there and getting to a spot. Like, yeah, like you said, it doesn't have to be like I'm here to transcend and or anything, you know, too fluffy like that. It just kind of helps center you and bring you into a good headspace for dealing with anything that the day has planned for you ahead of you, right?
Sure. I mean, you are literally sitting in the seat of your awareness, or the seat of your soul, the seat of the, you know, if I say to you, what sort of mind have you got today? And you say, oh, I've got a really busy mind today. I'll say, how do you know you've got a really busy mind? It's because you're in there observing that mind. So that part of you, the observer, the witness, the soul, the spirit, whatever you want to call it, when you meditate, I like to think of it as you're just hanging out in that part of you. You sit literally in that part of you like it's a chair, and you observe experience from that perspective. And when you do that a lot, that starts to happen off your cushion. And we call it bringing consciousness to bear. So you bring consciousness to bear on your relationships, on your work, on your driving, on your eating, on everything, you know, and it sort of permeates that part of you that's the soul, the witness, the, you know, that part starts to permeate the personality, which is the mind and the intellect. The thing that we get taught is us. You know, and that's the shift you see in people. It's not like meditators, it's not a personality style, but a lot of meditators are pretty calm. But that's because that's the appropriate response to most of life. So when you're centered in that observer self, you know, that's that old fable with a master and student, and the student says, why do we do all this meditation? And the master says, so we can make an appropriate response. That's what it's about. What does the context require of me? And so that most of the time is calm. Most of the time it's no problem here. You know, it's just is what it is. We're driving and that person's going slow. Oh, well, that's not a problem unless we make it a problem, you know. And so you start to see this commonality in meditators where they appear calm, but that's because that's our real state, you know. But we are trained to make problems where there are no problems, you know. The neuropsychologist Rick Hansen, he calls it paper tiger paranoia. There's no tiger in the bush, but everything becomes a tiger in the bush. The email, that person's perception, what might happen tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. So you become much more of a realist when you're a meditator. And in a proper way, you're just literally centered in reality. And that's why I find it quite funny, you know, some of the perceptions out there of it. And over the years when I've gone into corporate settings and they kind of, oh, this fluffy stuff. I'm like, really? Is it? Yeah. Or is making up stories in your head and relating to them like they're real, is that fluffy?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also too, in the corporate setting, they might not realize that going through the meditation process like that will actually help optimize their brain and focus to be better workers and be more productive.
Oh. huge. And there's now, you know, the neuroscientific studies around meditation and what it does for you and brain change and neuroplasticity and how you can work with your mind to change your brain and your nervous system and really cut into the effects of allostatic load and chronic stress, which is a massive epidemic that we've got and have had, you know, for the last, you know, couple of decades at least. Yeah, the findings are just quite stunning now on all of that, how it increases productivity, creativity, decreases presenteeism, which is a major problem, worse than absenteeism. You know, people are there, but they're not there. Yeah, and so that stuff. And so what we're seeing now is with us, you know, just quite a big uptake of all different sorts of corporates who are getting quite serious about bringing it. It used to be a bit of a tick box. Oh, mindfulness, we'll get the mindfulness woman in. She'll come in, she'll make us feel okay for half an hour and then she'll go away. We'll see you next year. You know, that used to be a bit what it was like. But now I'm having companies that actually just want to partner up and work properly with depth over time. Because as you say, it takes practice. You know, what we practice, we strengthen. So when they strengthen that mindful awareness, it's a game changer to how they experience stress.
Yeah. So awesome. Well, all good stuff. We certainly extended this podcast and went a little bit off script, but I think this is all really important stuff for our listeners to hear, especially those who are, you know, considering or learning more about mindfulness and meditation and all that good stuff. So I'll ask again, anything else to add before we sign off?
I'll just keep going if you ask me that question, because I love the topic. But yeah, thank you very much for having me. And yeah, we've tried to put resources and good links and interesting things on our website so people can use it as a resource. And it's about to go through a big overhaul soon as well. So we'll be adding more stuff. And yeah, I'm always keeping my eyes out for links to other people doing great work. And I try to put them on there so people can come to us and be put out to some of the really cool research and things that is happening in the world around this stuff.
Awesome. So, yeah. Great. Well, this perfect. Well, this concludes this Voices.Earth podcast interview with Briar Jacques, who is the co-founder of the Free Spirit Project, which is an organization that offers a wide range of mindfulness courses, retreats, programs, and much more. And Briar, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Matt. It was lovely to chat with you.
Likewise. Thank you for listening to this segment. .Earth is a real live internet domain that anyone can use. Listeners can go to our Voices.Earth site to find out what others are doing with their unique .Earth domains. Through Voices.Earth, you can also secure your own .Earth domain name through all major registrars.